interpretation is when the fullness of time has come, and he has no reading. So at this time, I'd like to call on Brother John.
I'd like to start out by saying that after a week like we've had, it's a kind of a humbling situation to be placed up here to try to keep up with what's been going on. Because, like it was mentioned earlier this week, we're facing people that knows a lot more about the subject maybe than the speaker does. But we also know that we're supposed to give an account of ourselves, and when we're asked to do something with for God, we're supposed to do it. We had a week of words, classes, of exhortation, and of warning. We heard about Jerusalem from the very beginning to the end. We heard about the 7,000-year plan and purpose, and we find out that it's in its last minutes of God's time, like we're in this Bible school, we're in the last minutes of its time. And I would like at this time to review what God has done at different times when the earth was filled with violence and evil as it is today, and when he stepped in to rectify certain things. And that's the reason this talk would be mentioned, the fullness of the time. Now, we know that particular statement was made when Christ was born, but there was other times in the Scripture when the fullness of time had come. Now, we've heard about the goodness of God, the long-suffering, and all these the parts of his personality. But God has a severity side also. And I think this is what I'm going to be talking about, more or less. Because it must be brought out so that we realize that we're dealing with a merciful God. But we also are dealing with laws and regulations that he has pronounced for us to do. Now, I would like to say, too, and we've heard this several times this week, about how blessed we are. Now, with my hearing, I'm going to quote somebody. I don't know who it was that said it, and I think I'm right, because a lot of times I don't hear what they say. But I think someone mentioned that there was around 5 billion people on this earth today. And the same person also said there was about 50,000 Christadelphians. Now, I don't know what 5 billion people are, and I don't know how many zeros is out there at the end of that, but I know we could take the 4 zeros off of 50,000 and take 4 zeros off of 5 billion, and we can see how fortunate and how blessed we really are, because the percentage would be mighty low. So that can never be mentioned too much of our blessings. Lately, we've been hearing talks on prophecy and our walks and so forth. Things that makes us realize that we are living in the last days of Gentile times, and that we should take particular attention to amend our ways and walk more perfectly before our Maker. I would like to continue this admonition by bringing to mind events that God brought about on account of the actions of mankind, and these were momentous occasions that either destroyed much people or that changed the course of the world that it was taking. God has always warned man what would happen if they disobeyed his commandments, and always gave man plenty of time to change their evil ways. Psalms 86:15, "But thou, O Lord, art a God full of compassion and gracious, long-suffering, and plenteous in mercy and truth." And as I mentioned, some of the momentous events, listen to the reason why God took the action He did. And this is what I'd like to call to your attention today. The first event is found in the sixth chapter of Genesis, which we're all very familiar with. "The earth was also corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence." Now, I underlined the word violence. "And God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. And God said unto Noah, the end of all flesh has come," or the fullness of that time had come. "For the earth is filled with violence. Though through them, and behold, I will destroy them with the earth." We know the story, how Noah was to build the ark and so forth. But remember, he was 100 years building the ark and was warning the people all the time what was going to happen. And I think this is one of the acts that shows the long-suffering of God. And this sort of thing was repeated several times throughout the Scriptures. We know in the Judges how they continuously sinned against him and how he continuously forgave them and provided those people with salvation. The question is, what were the people actually doing during Noah's day? Now, these are the things I'm going to try to bring out. What were they doing in comparison to what we're doing? Well, the sons of Cain were men of power who care nothing for the worship of God. Cain had been driven away from the center where God's worship was unto the land of exile. His children grew into a large family, and they became numerous and prosperous. They were skilled in music and in the arts. This is found in Genesis 4:21-22. And with this, they forged weapons of war to kill for what they wanted, like their father Cain did, and through his jealousy. That's Genesis 4:23-24. They rejected the way of God and became known as the sons of men because they followed the way of man or of the flesh. The children of Seth, on the other hand, were different. They became known as the sons of God, Genesis 6:2. And we too are called the children of God, and that's mentioned in the 1 John 3:1-2. For many years, these two groups were as nations apart. Neither mixed with the other, for their ways were completely different from each other. But gradually, the separateness between these two groups disappeared. The sons of God looked with envy at the pleasures and possessions of the sons of men. Perhaps they were allured by the music, the arts, and treasures in which they later excelled. They probably found worldly life an exciting change. Maybe they thought old men like Methuselah was a little old-fashioned and not up with the times. In any case, they were tested and failed. They were initially attracted by the things in which the sons of men excelled. Then they came to admire them. And finally, they became close friends with their Canaanites who were in exile from God. We know that matters went from bad to worse. It was God who had decreed the separateness between the two classes in the first place. He drove Cain into exile on account of his wickedness. But now, the sons of God were leaving the way of righteousness to go themselves into the land of exile. A few continued to worship God in truth. The majority were drawn into evil. Among the faithful sons of God, Enoch was outstanding. And we heard our brother talking about Enoch this morning as from the seventh of Adam in the line of Seth. Now this is mentioned in Jude, the 14th verse, and it is probably a type. Enoch proclaimed a warning message to stay in the way of righteousness that promised life. But one day he was missing. Now, we might apply this to the household today. Are we proclaiming the way of life? Someday we may be missing. Enoch was said to be the seventh from Adam through Seth, which is a type for us to consider. We too may be missing from our workplace, our ecclesia halls, our neighborhoods, and so forth. We, like Enoch, will be looked for but not found. We won't carry this episode any farther, though much more could be said about it. But the fullness of the time had come when God passed judgment on the then known world. Now, this is the first incident. In Genesis, the 15th chapter and the 16th verse, we find this. But in the fourth generation, they shall come hither again, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full. Now, we know what we're talking about here. Again, the time hadn't come for God to intercede. Now, at this point, we are not interested in the promises made to Abraham, but what God had in mind about the iniquity of the Amorites being not yet full. So we will discuss what was going on in the land when the fullness of that time had come. Baal was the principal god. Ashtaroth, Baal's wife, their principal goddess. She was a personification of the reproduction principle in nature. Now, the Bible don't give you a whole lot of this, but I went to archaeology works and secular history and found out about what the Amorite world was during this period of time. Priestesses were temple prostitutes. Sodomites were made male temple prostitutes. The worship of Baal, Ashtaroth, and other Canaanite gods consisted in the most extravagant orgies. Their temples were centers of vice. Archaeological notes from various names, when they got into it, they just found out that they're religious. They worshiped these gods, and when God sent Israel in there, he told them to destroy and drive out the Canaanites. And as we find out what was going on, we can find out. And Joshua, when he was told this, went at the task in dead earnest. God himself helping with mighty miracles. In reality, God did it. We've often heard people discussing how could God walk in, and when they killed every man, woman, and child, babies, animals, and everything, they had to cleanse this land because it was beyond our imagination. In excavations at Gezer, McAllister, one of the archaeologists' exploration, found in the Canaanite strata, which had preceded Israelites' occupation of about 1500 BC, the ruins of high places, which had been a temple in which they worshiped their gods, Baal and their goddess Ashtaroth. Under the debris in the high places, they found great numbers of jars containing the remains of children who had been sacrificed to Baal. The whole area proved to be a cemetery for newborn babies. Another horrible practice was that they called foundation sacrifices, which, when a house was to be built, a child would be sacrificed and its body built into the wall to bring good luck to the rest of the family. Many of these were found in Gezer. They have been found also in Megiddo, Jericho, and other places. What is this telling us of today? Are we sacrificing? We see the headlines in the paper continuously on the abortion problem. Are parents sacrificing their babies because they be in the way of their worship of gods? And don't think that we have to have a statue in the front of us to worship gods. We have materialistic things. We have a lot of things that we worship that we're not even conscious of. And I think this is maybe telling us something. In the stratum at Megiddo, during Ahab's time, the ruins of a temple of Ashtaroth, the goddess and wife of Baal, just a few steps from this temple was a cemetery where many jars were found containing remains of infants who had been sacrificed in the temple prophets. And these, the pagan gods, were murderers of little children. This is a sidelight on Elijah's execution of the prophets of Baal. Now, we remember what Elijah did to them. He lured them all into this building, closed the doors, and set it afire. That's how serious it was with him. It helps us understand why Jehu was so ruthless in the extermination of Baalism. Also, in the high places, McAllister found enormous quantities of images and plaques, Ashtaroth's picture, that would excite sexual activity, which was part of their worship. So Canaanites' worship was immoral indulgence as a religious rite in the presence of their gods. It seems that in large measure, the land of Canaan had become a sort of Sodom and Gomorrah on a national level. And of course, I didn't take up the Sodom and Gomorrah problem, which we see activity in our churches today. They're accepting all the Sodom and Gomorrah type of evil in their churches. Do we wonder any longer why God commanded Israel to exterminate the Canaanites? Did a civilization of such abominable filth and brutality have any right to live any longer? It is one of the history's examples of the wrath of God against the wickedness of nations. Archaeologists who dig in the ruins of Canaanite cities wonder that God did not destroy them sooner than he did. God's object in the command to exterminate the Canaanites, beside being a judgment on the Canaanites, was to keep Israel from idolatry and its shameful practices. God was founding the Israelitish nation for the one grand purpose of divinely the way for the coming of Christ by establishing in the world the idea that there is one true and living God and Jesus Christ whom he had sent. If Israel fell into idolatry, then there ceased to be any reason for its existence as a nation. So as a matter of precaution, it was needful to clean the land of the last vestige of idolatrous worship. And now, there was a lot of burning going on, and I have read where it was simply a practical thing to get rid of germs and all the evil that was in that country. In the matter, Joshua gave Israel a good start, if only Israel had kept it up. What a different story the world then would have been to tell. Since we have showed why God waited for a certain time to destroy the Canaanites, we'll pass on to the next period. The fullness of time had come for that. Galatians 4 and 5 reads, "But when the fullness of the time was come, God sent forth his Son, made of a woman, made under the law, to redeem them that were under the law, that we might receive the adoption of sons." Now, after 1450 years, we find another great event was to happen, and the apostle referred to it in Galatians 4:4-5, which I just quoted. Again, we would like to look over these years and find out what expired to make this fullness of the time. First, Israel went through the years of judges to keep them in the straight way. And after the death of Joshua, and we know their history was like all flesh has been since the beginning of time. For in the last verse in Judges, we find this: "In those days, there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which is right in his own eyes." This is again sounds familiar with the world today, because we're bombarded from every angle that we should have things, that we need these things, And we ought to have these things, and we're told, and we actually, it affects us eventually. So we have to be always precautious. Then they got a king, and he turned unrighteous. Then God replaced him with another, David, who was a man after God's own heart. Acts 13:22. And after 120 years, the kingly kingdoms fell apart and became two kingdoms, the 10 tribes and the 2 tribes. The 10-tribe kingdom never had a godly king. They were all evil and worshiped pagan gods. A few of the people from the northern tribes that wanted to worship God migrated to the south and joined the southern kingdoms. God caused the Assyrians to come and take the northern kingdoms out of their land, and they were then referred to as the lost 10 tribes until today. Now, you would think that the 2 tribes left, the 2 tribes of Judah, would have learned a lesson from what happened to Israel. But it was not too many years later that they were getting into the same ungodly state that Israel got into, and they even persecuted the prophets that God had sent to warn them that they would be carried away captive. So the time came when the mighty king of Babylon sent his army to carry them away captive. But they were promised through the prophets they would return in 70 years. And at the end of the 70 years, they were so worldly and their lifestyle had changed so much that they were few that wanted to return. And we remember the story in the Bible where Ezra had a hard time getting the people gathered together to come. They were reluctant about coming. Now we look at these things and think, how could they be so, well, stupid or dumb? Or how they could forget God and all the good he had done them. And still, if we look at ourselves and look close at our individual selves, what are we doing? Are we just as dumb and reluctant? During this time in history, new powerful kingdoms were being formed as the great image of the king of Babylon was being acted out on the stage of the world. And by the time of the fullness of this time, the world was already in the Iron Age. And during this long period of time, the larger part of the world was being peopled. Other governments were being established. Monetary systems were set up in different countries. Roads were being built from city to city, which made travel easier. These latter years, Rome had taken lessons from the Greek Empire and improved on what they had learned from them. Rome was noted for their construction, and Brother Ian brought this out. They were great wall builders and temple builders and all those kind of things. They built theaters. But mainly, the earth's population had grown that the then known world completely surrounded the Great Sea or the Mediterranean and all the way to the Atlantic Ocean. But in God's eye, the time had come to send his son to this earth and make known the mystery that was from the beginning. Galatians 1:5-27. Wherefore I am made a minister, Paul says, according to the dispensation of God, which is given to me for you to fulfill the word of God. Even the mystery which hath been hid from ages and from generations, but now is made manifest to his saints. And this little thing that was on the board, I don't know whether it ever got changed or not, but the saying that I heard it quite some years ago, and it really impressed me, that the Old Testament, and I'm going to quote it, I think, right, the Old Testament is the New Testament concealed. The New Testament is the Old Testament revealed. And if we look at that real close, it certainly is, and here's what Paul is saying. It was the fullness of the time had come where God had sent his son to reveal the Old Testament to the New Testament people and to reveal the Mosaic, because we know they never understood the worship they did, or very few of them did. To whom God would make known what is the riches of the glory of his mystery among the Gentiles, which is Christ in you, the hope of glory. Romans 16:25-26. Now to him that is of power to establish you according to my gospel and the preaching of Jesus Christ according to the revelation of the mystery which was kept secret since the world began, but now is made manifest and by the scriptures of the prophets according to the commandment of the everlasting God made known to all nations for the obedience of faith. Ephesians 3, 1 through 7. I'd like to just read that out of the scriptures. Ephesians 3rd chapter, 1 through 7. For this cause I, Paul, the prisoner of Jesus Christ, for you Gentiles, if ye have heard of the dispensation of the grace of God, which is given me to youward, how that by revelation he made known unto me the mystery, as I write afore in few words, whereby when ye read, ye may understand my knowledge in the mystery of Christ, which in other ages was not made known unto the sons of men, as it is now revealed unto his holy apostles and prophets by the Spirit, that the Gentiles should be fellow heirs and of the same body and partakers of his promise in Christ by the gospel, whereof I was made a minister according to the gift of the grace of God given unto me, the effectual working of his power. These words were from Paul, which was sent to the Gentile world, and we find that the physical world was set for his mission. Travel was made possible over water and land, dangerous but possible. Synagogues were built where he always went first, and when he was driven out, he went elsewhere. There were a few receptive people in those days in the world, like there always have been, but very, very few in percentage to the total. The Mosaic law that the Jewish nation claimed to be obedient to was terribly contaminated. Matthew 15, 3 and 9. We'll like to read that. But he answered and said unto them, why do you also transgress the commandments of God by your tradition? For God commanded, saying, honor thy father and mother, and he that curseth father or mother, let him die the death. But you say, whosoever shall say to his father or his mother, it is a gift by whatsoever thou mightest be profited by me, and honor not his father or his mother, he shall be free. Thus have ye made the commandment of God of none effect by your tradition. Ye hypocrites, well did Isaiah prophesy of you, saying, this people draweth nigh unto me with their mouth, and honoreth me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. But in vain they do worship me, teaching of doctrines the commandments of men. Again, we must be very, very careful that we don't fall into that category, because there'll be a day come when that will be done away with. Then later, Paul warned the brethren at Colossians 2:8 says, beware lest any men spoil you through philosophy and vain deceit, after the traditions of men, after the rudiments of the world, and not after Christ. Then we find the situation would get worse and would come from within the ecclesia. And I think Brother Jim brought that out very clearly this time, where the apostate religious came right out of the ecclesia. And don't ever think that it couldn't do it again. Don't ever think that we are so pure and righteous that this thing couldn't happen again. We've got to be on our toes to keep the truth in its purity. It's pure, and all we have to do is follow it. Then we find this situation would get worse and would come from within the ecclesia. For I know this, that after my departure shall grievous wolves enter in among you, not sparing the flock. The word grievous here means, and this might surprise you, I'm sure a lot of you know, it means savage, with no mercy. And history has proved what was said it was right. Because we know that many a true believer was killed, and not just killed, they were tortured with the worst. Rome was real good at torturing people. Very much the truth, for eventually the Roman Church came from it. Let us now jump another 2,000 years, nearly. And what do we find? We again find what the Scriptures prophesied, Daniel 12:1. And at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince, which standeth of the children of the people. And there shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, even to that same time. And at that time thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book. And later, the Apostle Paul was speaking of the same period of time. In the Acts 15th chapter 31st, we find this. He hath appointed a day in which he will judge the world in righteousness. Another fullness of the time. And I think we're in that particular fullness of the time. Like I mentioned before, we're just minutes away considering God's timing. What shall we look for in these last days as we have in the other fullnesses of time? 1 Timothy 3:1 and 2 says, This know also, that in the last days perilous times shall come. For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy. 2 Thessalonians 2:13 or 2:3. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come except there come what? A falling away. First, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition. There are many other references we could quote to state what the world is like today. And I would like to itemize a few of the problems that caused God to interfere with man's ways during the 6,000-year plan. We find the first one, 2449 B.C., violence and turning from God's ways to ways of the flesh. They're all familiar today. In 1451 B.C., immorality in its worst form, even involved in the worship of their gods. And I think that I think we all know it when we're out in the world and we hear people talking, that we Christadelphians have shielded ourselves from the world, that we really don't know the evil of the immorality that is going on right under our own noses. And maybe we ought to be thankful that we don't. Human sacrifice, which is rampant today. And what they sacrifice the little ones for, we don't know. God does. The priests in Israel were imposing on the people the traditions of men and not the true worship and understanding of God's ways. And it was time to make manifest the mystery of the gospel that was kept a secret from the beginning. In 1991 A.D., a time of trouble that has never been since a time of trouble that has never been since there was a nation. Lovers of self, untruthful, greed, plus all the things that were mentioned during the other periods we touched on. Closing, I would like to make a summary of the things we spoke of. From time to time in human history, then, there have risen crises at which it has pleased God to make himself known by the judgments which he executed. Generations followed soon forgot these judgments, for in flesh dwelleth no good thing. But the fact remains, in every generation, the remnant that may have come under the power of the word has taken heed to the record of the past, and remember them in hope of the day of final vindication. It is so still, for we read of the destruction in Noah's flood of the world of the ungodly, and remember Christ's impressive application of it to the day of his coming. We read of the events of the Egyptian Exodus and the judgments upon the gods of Egypt. And remember, that is written in the prophets, Micah, that marvelous things are to come on the nations after that same pattern. We read of the destruction of Sennacherib's army and his own assassination in the presence of his God in Nineveh, in whose name he had defied the God of Jerusalem. And now we read of the judgments of God upon the idols of Babylon. And remember that there is still a Babylon adoring phantoms, vain as wood and stone, against which adoration we earnestly protest, exhorting men to turn to God from idols and serve the living and true God and wait for his Son from heaven. So we read as a special day in the future. Quotations from Acts 7:31. Because he has appointed this day in which he will judge the world in righteousness by that man whom he hath ordained, whereof he hath given assurance unto all men, in that he hath raised him from the dead. And I think that day is very, very close. I believe the fullness of that date is upon us, so let us concentrate on our lives that they are in order for the special day. And I've always maintained, I feel that we should spend more time to be sure that we are ready for that day and not worry about when that day comes. Because if we are prepare ourselves for the time that it comes, we don't care when it comes. The sooner the better. And we won't have to try to figure out just what day and time it will be. With the figures we mentioned at the first of this talk, we are blessed above many people, but let us not get the big head, for the Scripture says, many are called, but few are chosen. Now, the Scripture, the figure I give of how fortunate we are being called out, now out of that small figure, that's called many in God's eyes, and a few out of that figure is chosen. So, shouldn't we take note? We had better take heed to be a workman, not that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. One who searches the Scriptures daily, one who is diligent, seeks to please God, one who really believes, John 17:3, this is life eternal, that we might know thee, the only true God, and Jesus Christ, whom thou hast sent. Thank you.